We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 355 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Jim Hilton, and joining me from La Liga Lowdown is their Barcelona correspondent. It's Roman de Arquer. How's it going, Roman?
Hey, Dan. Nice to be here in the show. And I mean, it's all going well. It's very hot here in Barcelona. And we're definitely very excited about the Champions League final, of course, in the women's football, which is coming up very shortly. So that's definitely a topic we'll want to talk about.
Yeah, I don't think we're actually watching Champions League. At least I'm not watching the Champions League final. I mean, I might check along, but I'm actually going to be on vacation that day. And my wife has said, hey, is Real Madrid playing the Champions League final? I don't think you actually need to get away from your vacation to watch that. So I'll find out what happened. But the Champions League final, as you said, that I will be watching is certainly the women's feminine taking on Lyon. So before that, though, Roman, again, I want to welcome you to the show and say we have had Ruri Barlow from La Liga Lowdown on a bunch, and somehow it didn't work out that I had never had the Barcelona correspondent, so you are particularly a fan of Barcelona. And for now, again, we're all going to be fans of the Femení, as people who've been following this channel and this podcast for a while now know that the Barcelona podcast, you know, we've been with the women's team when they were getting second to Atletico Madrid a few seasons ago. And since that time, they've just exploded. And, you know, the reason also we start here is because before we talk about the men's team, this Women's Champions League final tomorrow is, without hyperbole, Roman, it could be the biggest women's club football match in history. I'm not saying it's going to be the best, right? Like, I know that narratives are written by games when they're finished, right? Results and the way things go tend to write the narratives. But heading into this Champions League final, there has been no greater narrative than there has been. It is basically, even though the Femení are the all-conquering side right now, they won the treble last year. They cannot be defeated, 30 for 30, perfect in their league, having won now three straight times, yet they still represent the field against Lyon, because Lyon has won five of the last six after crashing out of the quarterfinals last season, and they have won seven Champions Leagues in the last 12 years. They have written Champions League women's football. It is Lyon, and it is everybody else. Like Wolfsburg, yes, but it is everybody else. And I think, truly, for this final, Barcelona are on the precipice of saying, hey, everybody else can win that Champions League final.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you basically summed it up pretty well. I mean, Lyon has been the dominant side in Europe for a long, long time. I mean, before it, of course, Barcelona now overtook them, we could say, in recent years. And maybe they had a little downfall, we could say, in this last recent years where Lyon weren't looking as good as they used to. But they've jumped back up to the top. And now it's going to be a super exciting game because it's Lyon trying to reconquer that trophy they really love so much, and Barcelona trying to maintain, of course, their domination, we could say, in the women's football. So it's definitely going to be a super exciting game, two super strong teams. And I mean, the hardest part, I think, for both sides is to actually maintain themselves at the top, because when you're winning everything, it's really complicated to keep on going and winning and winning and winning. So, I mean, a lot of credit, especially to these girls from Barca, you know, who've managed to win every single game in their competition, their domestic competition, as you said. And now they're going to try and win the Champions League once again. And I think they definitely have the motivation for this game. I think that it's going to be there, and it's going to be super fun to watch. And we'll have to see if they manage to win, how they'll manage to keep up with this level in future years. But at the moment, they have to focus on this final, which is just right around the corner. And it's definitely going to be one you can't miss out on if you want or if you enjoy following women's football.
Yeah, I think even beyond women's football, I mean, the just how far it's all come in such a short amount of time. As you mentioned, Lyon, they won their first title in 2007. That was the same year that the Femenil were relegated from the first division of Spanish football, where there was a moment when then club president, what was his name again? I think it was Juan Laporta, said, you know, basically had said, I don't know if we're going to be able to go forward with this. And they decided to keep on with the project. And then over the last few seasons now, they put more and more investments in it. They won their first title in 2012, so that was just 10 years ago. And so for the Femini to become what they have, even now, even if they don't win this match, even if they lose 3-1 or 2-1, or they lose on penalties or whatever it is, I think this project is showing that it is sustainable in the way that Lyon's has been sustainable. And the general manager for the Femini, that being Markel Zubizarreta, this quote is my favorite quote from him about what the Femini have done and what their path forward is. The club was not building a women's football project, but a professional football project in women's football. To invest in the same way, to build the same project, right? And that is the connection, the through line in which we talk about the Femini through the lens of FC Barcelona, where it's not just the men's team and then everybody else is under the same umbrella. No, when you look at the way that the infrastructure of this team has been built out with youth coaches, accepting the first nine girls, I believe, to the La Masia in the last year, the measures that are being taken where, just like the first team, they're saying that, hey, you know, superstars are going to come and go, but this team is built on the back of its academy. And I think that is what has made, for me, the same way I got into the first team. The fact that there are superstars. Barcelona is maybe the best city in the world. I mean, you live there, not me. So one of the best cities in the world. And so, of course, it's going to attract superstars, right? Lewandowski is like, hey, I think I want to sit on a beach in Barcelona instead of going somewhere else and dealing with another Munich winter. And so for women's footballers, it's the same thing, where they come to Barcelona, they come to play. But this team was built on the back of the academy and will continue to be, in moments of need, built on the infrastructure that FC Barcelona as a whole project is built. And that's why I think this is sustainable for the women's team, regardless of what happens. And I also think the 90,000 people that filled the Camp Nou on two occasions is also a good sign that this is maybe not, say, just the beginning, but, you know, this is a new era. And, you know, this thing with Lyon that's happening, again, they're the one team that they haven't conquered because they didn't have to conquer them last year. So Lyon really is, you know, it feels like, I haven't played video games in years, but it feels like that final boss, like the final challenge you have to overtake. You have to take the treasure from that, you know, from Bowser, if you're Mario, or whoever it may be, you know?
Definitely. I mean, it's going to be winning that. I think it's just going to not complete the project, we could say, but definitely take it to a really high level and say that they have achieved amazing things. And as you said, you know, it's kind of followed the foundations of what Barca is. Developing the youth system, working really hard on that. And it's surprising to see how both men's team, we could say, and the women's team have kind of gone down different paths in recent years, taking into account that women's football was really improved with Bartomeu as president, whereas the men's football kind of went the other way, you know. And it's incredible how one is so professional, so well worked, job has been done fantastically. And then you have the men's club where the spending was horrifying and the economic problems have surfaced now all in one go, you know. So it's just so surprising to see how things diverge one way or another, taking into account that it is the same club after all, you know. And it maybe makes you think that the fact that the men's team can spend so much more money than the women's team, maybe it doesn't make you work so much or figure out how you really properly want to spend that money to make it work. And in the end, we just have to give credit, you know, to the women's team, everyone behind the team, also the players, of course, because they're fantastic. They're doing super well. And it's incredible. And it's really proud, you know, as a Barca fan to see how we're one of the best teams in the world. We're helping women's football, you know, to take a step forward worldwide. And now we can fill up stadiums, as you mentioned, twice. I was actually in the first one against Real Madrid in the Clásico. I went to the stadium and the crowd was just fantastic. I honestly can tell you that I've never seen the same atmosphere in a men's game. Honestly, it's true that I haven't been to maybe some of the more important men's team games, but the crowd that day in that Real Madrid game with Barca and the Camp Nou with the women's team was just phenomenal. Honestly, people were devoted from the first minute right until the end. And honestly, if they can keep up with this level and people can keep getting attracted to this football, I mean, it's really going to go a long way, I'd say.
Well, I think what makes it even more incredible for them is what we're saying, that the narratives in which we speak about this, of course, we always have to see it through the lens of what is the dominant force when we speak about football, and that is through the lens of men's football. And yet these women, particularly Alexia Putellas, winning the Ballon d'Or, and then on the other side, the first Ballon d'Or in the women's game was won just 3 years ago by Ada Hegerberg, and she's going to be on the other side for Lyon. And these are players that are not only having to worry about their football, you know, like as much as we criticize Gerard Piqué for worrying more about tennis and deals in Saudi Arabia, like as much as we contend with him getting into other business, these women's players not only have to worry about their football on the field, but what they represent. They are pioneers of women's football. They are pioneers of the game. And so there is a responsibility greater than so much of what the men teams have to worry about, because they really just have to worry about their own personal legacies and the legacies of their teams through the trophies that they win. And these women, it's a matter of, not only do we have to have you win the trophies, but you have to win it in such a way that you're going to be remembered and pioneer this thing that is growing. It feels like it's still, again, in its infancy for a team that was relegated just 15 years ago and just professionalized, by the way, 7 years ago. So, you know, 2015 was the first year the Femenil was professionalized. Mm-hmm. I can't say that enough. So last part about speaking about this final, I just want to quickly, Roman, break down what we might see. Because like the other reason why this is such a monumental thing is there, usually, when we're watching the Femenil, you're looking the other side and saying for Real Madrid, hey, they've got a few pieces. They're building it. There's two or three stars there. And Wolfsburg has three or four stars after Rolfo and CGH were recruited to Barcelona. And yet you look at these two starting lineups, and on the other side, it's just as strong for Lyon. And that's what's, I think, not to say terrifying, but that's why for the first time this season, you know, there are, I think, some real nerves. Jenny Hermoso can look across and say the 22-year-old American, Katarina Macario, and Ada Hegerberg, who I already mentioned, a former Ballon d'Or winner, you know, they arguably are a better strike force than what Barcelona has. Yet they have, Mariona will likely be still returning from injury, but she'll likely start alongside Jenny and Graham Hansen, as you know, on the right side. And then I expect to see Alexia and Patri and Bonmati in the middle, and Rolfo on the left, rather. And then you're obviously going to have Jenny somewhere there again as the attacking midfielder. And then Paredes and Torrejón. And I think that, and Paños I should mention out, but to me, yes, I know that Bonmati and Alexia Putellas, we've been talking about that for a while. Like, those two are the ones that are going to be, if they're the best players in the game, if Barcelona control the midfield, this is theirs to lose. But Mapi Lyon is the player, when looking at Lyon, she's the one that I'm interested in watching, because the way that Graham Hansen gets free on that right wing is through those diagonal switch play from Lyon, that being Mapi Lyon. So when Mapi has time to get on the ball and switch to the other side, Barcelona are so much more dynamic. Again, for the midfield, it's just going to be a fight with Lindsay Horan, and Henri and Eguerola, if she's healthy. But for the Barca midfield, yeah, they're going to have the hands full. And if Lyon can use her passing to open things up, as well as her defending, like Lyon's, Mapi's defending is not say here or there, but the reason why Irene Paredes was brought in from PSG, again, the team that conquered Lyon last year, that's another subplot here, that Paredes is the defender's defender, the one who's just tasked with, hey, can you shut down Hegerberg? But Macario, with her movement, if she can pop up, very much like Jenny does, she plays a number 10, if she can pop up in a really dangerous spot, it's going to be on Lyon and Mapi to put out that, Mapi Lyon rather, to put out that fire. So that's certainly where I'm looking as one of the key places in this game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. But in the end, I think it really comes down to Barca being able to play their football, you know, because if they manage to have control, to have the possession, to build from the back like they like to, I mean, of course, Lyon are going to have their chances. It's undoubtable because they have quality and they're also going to try and have the ball themselves. But, I mean, Barcelona have, for me, one of the best midfields there is out there in women's football. And as you said, Bonmatí and Botellas are just two key players for Barca, especially not just having the ball, but going forward. You know, Barca has a lot of key players that are capable of generating a lot in attack. And even girls like Pina, who for me this season has really developed her football a lot. She's looked fantastic. I think she could also be a very important player, whether she starts or not. But I mean, in the end, I think it comes down to being capable of showing their personality, you know, not feeling the pressure of Lyon, because it's true that they're going to want their vengeance from that 4-1 defeat a few years back in the Champions League, where Lyon were the dominant side back then. It was really hard to beat them. But this time, you know, they have to forget about that. I think just focus on the game, focus on their football. And, you know, if they can dominate the game like they want to, I think we'll definitely have the chances that we always see from Barcelona, as they're a very offensive side. And they'll just have to keep focused, avoid any setbacks at the back. With Mapi Leon, as you said, who's a fantastic player. She kind of reminds me of Puyol in a way, because she's that dominant figure in that center of the defense who can move the ball really well. And I really like her also, as you mentioned. So, I mean, in the end, I just hope that Barca are not too nervous. I think they've earned that category of being a reliable side who can play their own football without being too worried about who they're facing.
I mean, well, they have said that the change between 2019 and now was very much physical, but also very much mental. That they knew at that moment, there's the great story about them on the plane. On the plane, not only are they sad, but they're saying, hey, not only we're more angry than sad, you know, we're motivated. That they knew that they physically weren't up to it, that mentally they had to be tougher, and they have been nothing short of, my favorite word for them is inevitable. They've been inevitable, they've been ruthless, and they've been unstoppable. And it is what is that saying, that, you know, when an immovable object meets an unstoppable force, right? That's basically what this is between Lyon and, you know, even their manager, that being Lyon, Sonia Bonpastor. I mean, she's been around the block before as a player, where she's won the Champions League before with Lyon. She's a figurehead for them. She's a club legend, and she could be the first player/manager to win the Champions League title. On the other side, Jonathan Guerelza could beat his former manager, as in he was the assistant, in Luis Cortes. He could beat his record and become the youngest Champions League manager in history. And I think that would be, I mean, I don't even think, but that would be men and women. I don't even need to look that up. He said his mid-30s. Like, him and I are very similar age, so very much on the same page there. So, yeah, so it is a final that we are all anticipating. Again, I think, as I said, it's arguably the biggest women's club football match in history. That's why we did a full 15 minutes on it. So, Roman, unfortunately, I have to disappoint you, and we have to talk about the men and some of that transfer stuff, because no offense to the Villarreal match, I don't want to spend too much time. Like, do we really need to preview that? Not really, because it doesn't matter to either side. You know, Villarreal is usually a fun match. I'll say it that way, right? Just like you have the Real Betis jersey behind you. Usually Villarreal is one of those teams that in the Liga that, as they say, like to play football, you know, want to play.
And absolutely.
Some fun results.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, sorry, that I'm a big fan also of Villarreal, because I kind of felt like they're kind of similar to Barcelona in a way that they also like to work a lot their youth system, bring up players like we've seen the most recent example, Pau Torres, of course. He's become an emblem for the team. And also, I always like the style of football they tend to play. It's obviously varied between managers, but they've always tried to have the ball, tried to build up from the back. Different to Barcelona in a way, but of course, that's why I've always sympathized quite a lot with Villarreal. And as you said, it always tends to be a very exciting game going forward, getting goals from both sides. So I hope we can see something similar, even though Barca aren't really fighting for much. But we do know that Villarreal still have to clinch that Conference League position.
Right, yeah. Villarreal does have something to play for. And as you mentioned, yeah, they do bring up a lot of young players. And they've supplemented their squad this season. We already saw Lo Celso. And then, of course, it's always a return of Paco Alcácer. And they have those teenagers, too. Like, the youngsters are also just continuing to shine for them this season. And if you please refresh my memory on the one that I'm thinking of in particular.
Jeremy Pino?
Correct, right. So, yeah, as good as they can be, you know that Villarreal can always give a good match and a good fight. But we unfortunately are talking about, as you mentioned, the Villarreal Academy, a former Real Madrid Academy product, and that is Marco Alonso, whose father played for Barcelona. And unfortunately, it's funny because I've done Lewandowski, we've done the Koulibaly in recent shows, and both those shows, I said, oh, Marco Alonso, and I just brushed it off, and I said, I don't want to talk about it until it feels like it's real. Unfortunately, it really does feel real. But being connected to him is, you know, I don't want to take the words out of your mouth here, but he does win a lot of aerial duels. Progressive passing is good, shot-creating action, shots. You know, as much as I do want to reject the idea, he would be fine as Alba's backup. Totally fine as Alba's backup. He plays as a left midfielder in Tuchel's 3-4-2-1, but he can play, I don't know about him as the left center back in a back three, but, you know, again, he can be that left midfielder. He can also play as a traditional left back as well. But I think why people are fighting against this, Roman, is that not only is there going to be a little bit of a price tag, but if Barca and Xavi are willing to pay that price tag, then it shows you, just like the De Jong rumors, it's an indication of the club's monetary situation. And it's an indication of the kind of player that Barcelona will have available to them. And I think there's a disappointment that comes with that. Because he's a 31-year-old. Yeah, and he started and played 65% of all matches and minutes for Chelsea this season. But there's something not only not very exciting about him, but very limited. And there is a ceiling on a player like that of that age. And you're saying, yeah, okay, we're admitting that the only options for us are free transfers, are guys who are in their 30s, on who, you know, other clubs are not trying to spend big money on.
Yeah, I mean, I was honestly quite surprised by the fact that they wanted to go for Marcos Alonso, because being 31 years old, as you said, I mean, he's not really a replacement for long term as a fullback in the left position where Jordi Alba is, you know, because I mean, he's almost Jordi Alba's age, we could even point out. He's definitely a decent replacement. He has enough quality, I think, to play in that position, especially going forward. I think he's a very interesting fullback, and that's something that Barca has always valued, you know, from their fullbacks, the capacity to go forward. Even though right now we do need a guy who can also defend a bit, because as we know, Barca's defense as a whole, I don't think individually the players have been bad, but as a whole, there's been some structure problem, we could say, where they have been incapable of working as a unit, as a block, you know, and that's why we've been conceding so many goals in the past few seasons, I'd say, not just this season. Barca's defense has been struggling for a while now. And the fact that they want Marcos Alonso also surprises me, because they've already apparently agreed terms with Christensen, and also they say they're interested in Azpilicueta, and also apparently Rudiger is going to Madrid. So, I mean, is all the backline of Chelsea going to leave in one go? That just kind of seems a bit too much, you know? So it's a bit surprising that that could happen, even though it has been said that by Marcos Alonso that he does want to leave and he doesn't want to renew his contract. So, I mean, if the price tag is decent, as you said, I mean, then, okay, I can accept it. But if we're going to have to pay, I don't know, 25, 30 million or something like that, I just think it doesn't really make much sense. I would honestly look for a fullback that's a bit younger, that has a bit more projection for the future, that could really replace Jordi Alba in the long term. Because at the moment, Jordi Alba, I think, is still better fullback than Marcos Alonso, in my opinion. He has had his ups and downs. Jordi Alba has been very criticized by the fan base, and I understand why at certain points he has been playing very poor football, but I still think he's very good. I mean, he gives over 10 assists per season, and he always generates a lot going forward, even though his defensive capacities are quite limited. So with Marcos Alonso, as I said, he's a decent replacement to have there on the bench, but I mean, I was expecting more of a long-term fullback for Barca.
Yeah, and that's the disappointment, right? That you're just kicking the can down the road on a really, really crucial position. Because when you looked at some of the worst results this season were the games when Alba either struggled or the fullback play just wasn't what it needed to be. And if your fullback level isn't what it needs to be in modern football, especially when you play that, not only that positional, but that possession style game, your fullbacks have got to be good enough. And when Barca's fullbacks aren't good enough, then they are not good enough. And that seems to be a direct correlation. And, you know, I always say the same thing with Alba. that you can criticize Alba, totally fair, especially defensively, obviously, and especially in big matches when the lights are brightest. That is when Alba has unfortunately faltered in the way that the team has faltered. And you could talk about the issues between the ears and things like that. But as far as the numbers go, as far as an overall season, you know, it's difficult when you're in a match and you're saying, hey, Alba did this wrong. And that's totally fair after a match to come away saying, because I think, you know, I do the YouTube reviews on YouTube, and I always try to judge over the course of the end of a season. I look back at who were my two cover athletes, because usually it was the two most important players of those games. And Alba only makes the cover, like, I think he usually makes it like twice for being the man of the match, usually when he scored a golazo. And then he makes it two or three other times with his head in his hands or something for a bad result that Barca got. Like, that's usually where he comes up like two to three, four or five times a year. Half of them are good. But I always
classic
say about
Alba.
Right. But I always say about Alba, you know, whenever he's replaced, whenever it's time to replace him, and not even replace, but whenever it's even time to find a backup, whether it was Digne, whether, just name him. Like, there's a reason why no one can take his, it's not even about the club that also, Amigos. It's more that Alba is still one of the best left backs in the world. Like, he's aging out, he's getting older, we know what he can't do defensively, but I always say, good luck replacing that guy. Good luck replacing what he does offensively over the course of a season. Because again, not about just one game. Because Alonso might be a better player in one game, but he's going to be Alba's backup. Because Alba is unequivocally just, I mean, even though Alonso had 5 goals, 6 assists, 46 matches this season, he does his job. But again, Alba's just better. Alba's better than almost every other left back in the world.
Yeah, and that happens, not just in a fullback position in the left, but also on the right, in many positions with Busquets, with the fact that Dani Alves had to come back at 38 years of age. Yeah. Because our fullbacks weren't performing at the level that was required. It's very difficult to succeed at Barcelona. That's something that I think fans have to understand and realize. Where we've had lots of quality players come through the club and have left that through the back door because they just weren't capable, whether it's mentally, physically, or in terms of quality, to reflect what Barca means. And we can look at Arda Turan, we can look at Andre Gomes, Paco Alcácer. I mean, these are good players. These are not like trash guys who are really poor. They just weren't capable of replacing or performing at the level that others were, you know. So it's really difficult at Barcelona to find a key player. So when a guy like Pedri comes through, that's just something you have to really worship, or Gavi or Ansu Fati. These guys, you know, of course, they still have to find their rhythm, you know, and sustain themselves. But at the moment, they're doing well in that sense, and hopefully they will. But of course, when you bring them from outside, not just from the youth system like Pedri, which was maybe the more recent and incredible example, that he just came here and managed to find his groove there in the midfield. I mean, it's really hard for players from outside to come and succeed. That's why I understand that some people, for example, were saying that it wasn't worth signing Haaland, because imagine he comes, he's really good, but imagine he's just not the level you expect. And you've paid, I don't know, 120 million or whatever, you know. There's a risk factor, even though you do expect a player like Haaland to be good anywhere. But there are other players which are maybe not at the same top level as Haaland that, you know, come to Barcelona, hope to be good, and in the end are very poor. We've seen it also with Lenglet. We've seen it with so many players, you know. So it's going to be interesting to see, whether with Kessié, with Christensen, who apparently both are signed, if they're going to be able to sustain the level required at Barcelona, or they're going to also fade into oblivion in a way, you know. So that's something that people have to always keep in mind. It's very, very difficult to succeed at Barcelona.
I don't think Barcelona's ever spent more than 100 million on a player that didn't work out, right? They've never done that. No, never. I can't think of a single one that didn't work out in that way.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right.
I don't want to talk about that because it's so disappointing to see how we've wasted our money, we could say, in recent years. Neymar at least left, leaving a good chunk of money, and then we just threw it in the trash.
Yep. That's not breaking news here. So, before we get to more other transfers in potentially, I think part of the story that we have to keep reminding ourselves, I think as the podcast, I need to do my due diligence, that players have to leave. You know, that's always a little thing that you'll hear Alemania or Laporta will slip in there at the end. Like, you know, I know you want to bring guys in, but guys have to leave. And I think we've heard some positive stuff this week about Umtiti maybe potentially, even though he took that big salary reduction and the club does owe him a little bit of thank you after the frustration of him not leaving last summer on huge wages and then choosing to lower his wages in January, where, you know, he also was a little incentivized to do that too. I think he does want to play football again. So this summer, I think he's apparently preparing himself to leave. We know that Lenglet is pretty much preparing to have communication as well. He would be the more suspect one. And then Martin Brathwaite, the same thing. But it does sound like some players will be on their way out, but it's how many. It's the sheer number and also what they're worth and what the market for those players is. Because again, the market is, even a transfer fee is less than what their wages are. And again, those moves are more about getting their wages off the books than they are about securing some kind of transfer fee. Because any transfer fees that we're talking about are coming through the CVC deal or through any sale of 49% of Barca Studios, because that revenue will then allow Barcelona to make new signings with transfer money they do have available to them and keep it within financial fair play. So that's where the transfer fee matters. And it really is more about getting those wages off the books to reset your salary limit in the Liga.
Yeah, absolutely. It's basically about that. So that would allow the club, of course, to bring better players. That's what Laporta has as an objective, we could say. But let's not forget that it's not just those players that you mentioned. Also, we have lots that are coming back from loans and all that kind of stuff, you know, like Iñaki Peña, like Collado, like Pjanic. Griezmann apparently is going to stay at Atletico Madrid, Trincao, you know. So, I mean, they also have to find solutions for these players, whether they're going to keep them, like Collado, who apparently should be staying if Xavi likes him, who apparently does like him. Now, as you said, for now, they've talked to Brathwaite, they've talked to Umtiti personally. Xavi has talked to them personally and said that he doesn't want him to continue. And they've also said that he's talked to Mingueza and even Ricky Puig face-to-face to tell them that he wants them to find another club for next season, basically. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done in that sense, because fans are very critical in this sense, because they don't like a player being sold at a poor price, even though it's something that Barca has struggled historically. I mean, we haven't been good at selling players at good prices. And there's always been this little comparison with Real Madrid, where they usually sell their players at better prices, whereas Barca struggled to do that. But I think that this season, at least, or at least these last few seasons, it's more understandable, taking into account, as you said, that they need to get wages off the bill. They need to look towards the fair play in La Liga and be able to allow other transfers to come in. Because, as a matter of fact, as it is now, I think that not even Kessié or Christensen could be signed. They would need to get rid of salaries. So it's pretty chaotic. There's a lot of work to be done. I mean, credit to Matteo Alemany, who already did a great job, I think, especially in the winter transfer market, where nobody thought anything interesting could come out of that. And we got Aubameyang, we got Ferran Torres, we got Madama. So, I mean, that was pretty impressive. And Dani Alves. So, I mean, credit to him for that. I'm sure that he'll come up with some of these incredible things he does, but it won't be easy, because getting rid of so many players, because Barca has to get rid of, I wouldn't say a dozen, but I mean half a dozen or more than half a dozen for sure. So it's going to be a lot of work to be done, because if they really want to bring in Lewandowski, then I mean they're going to have to look into that.
Yeah, and all that business that needs to go out does make me a bit skeptical on, again, players that are getting linked, like the Koulibaly thing. The Napoli's president came out and said there's been no contact, nothing like that. And it's one of those points where I've asked people last week and the week before to say, if you can only have one, or if you can only pick two of these three players, and you have to kind of decide piece by piece, because again, Marco Alonso, you know, if Lewandowski is the big fish, if that's it, if that's where you're spending your money, then that means there's no Koulibaly, pretty much set in stone. That means that the left-back position is going to have to be as cheap as possible, Marco Alonso. That means that free transfers of Kessié and Christensen, that's where you're keeping that. And then you even might lose, if Azpilicueta's on the way, then Dest is gone, right? You can't have three guys potentially play right back. And that's a choice that the club is making, to take that 22 million or whatever they wind up getting, or 25 million euros, whatever they wind up getting for Dest, to take that and just use it on Azpilicueta and try to pocket some of the others, again, to get that not only wages down, and it's crazy that Azpilicueta be so much lower than Dest on wages, let's put it that way, but then also to get your, not your wages down, but also to have your financial fair play be a little bit healthier, because you're sending transfer fees out the other way. So really that's just like a for the books, in the same way that Artur and Pjanic would do, which again doesn't sit well with me, because whenever you take a 33-year-old and bring him in and you get rid of a 21-22-year-old, like it doesn't sit well with me. But if that's what the club has to do for accounting purposes, until they can truly do like a hard reset, which, as Laporta said, it'll probably be next summer would be the time when they might have some money to spend. And then that's always the worrisome too thing about Barca that you said. What happens when Barca has too much money to spend?
But I'm sure that they will have learned from their lesson, at least in this recent period of time. Maybe in 10 years they'll forget and they'll start doing the same shambles or mess they made. But hopefully I think they're going to learn from their mistakes.
I don't think we'll ever see it that bad. I don't think it'll ever be as bad as the Bartomeu thing.
Never say never, Dan. Never say never. You never know. Maybe Bartomeu's cousin or Sandro Rosé's son come back someday and mess it up all again. But hopefully, hopefully we won't go through this again. Hopefully the club will get out of this because, I mean, we're still immersed in all this situation and we don't really know where it's going to go. But there seems to be a certain optimism also going forward with the new stadium and the new Spy Barça and all that, which is also quite a positive because if they're capable of going ahead with that, going forward with that, it means that they see that the club has a bright future in that sense. So that's good news. And of course, as you said, there's a lot of work to be done. I mean, the signings, because it is a bit disappointing having to bring such veteran players. I mean, some, of course, I think are always good to have, you know, it's always good to have a compensation between experienced players and new talents. But it is surprising that it's Azpilicueta, it's Marcos Alonso, it's Lewandowski. It feels like we're only signing 30-plus players for next season. But, I mean, if the quality is there and if they can get good salaries, maybe contract which aren't too long, and we can quickly renew this squad maybe in the next couple of years, then, I mean, maybe it wouldn't be so bad if in the short term they give us good performances, and then we can work from there on and build the club back to where it used to be.
Yeah, it's a basketball idea. Like, if you bring those three players in and Barca wins La Liga, not even Champions League, but if they win the Liga next year from Real Madrid, whether Madrid gets Mbappe or not, you know, depending on when this podcast comes out, or I don't know, it may be another week before it decides, but I'm glad I don't have to be a part of that saga. But if they're basically trading, I mean, if they trade Dest and a younger player, you know, we don't know about De Jong, but if they are basically trading the future or in 2 to 3 years' time for one La Liga, you know, because I think Barca fans, you know, there was a point. Messi made Barca fans and culés take La Ligas for granted, and now they won't. And I think you're once again reminded that Ligas matter. It's hard to win the Spanish title. There's a reason why Barcelona have finished second more times than they finished first. Well, I don't think that's true. They finished second through fourth more times than they finished first, obviously, in the Liga. So, you know, you're basically trading older players and bringing them in for that reason. Now, the last thing that I want to hit real quick before we head out is I did have a YouTube video yesterday called The Next Great Brazilian. And this kind of was started, the gears on this started because of Rafinha from Leeds United and how you have all these culés watching the Premier League final few weeks because if they're relegated, then the clause is lower, yada, yada, yada. And the idea that, you know, I also get thinking obviously about Coutinho because he's finally shipped off to permanently to Aston Villa. That saga is over, we'll say, the saga with him at Barcelona. You know, there is truly something to Barcelona and Real Madrid always in the arms race for the next great Brazilian, where when Barca got Neymar through, you know shadowy methods through Sandro Rosell, you could tell that Florentino Perez said, I want the next one. You know, I'm going to get the next one, whether it's Vinny Jr., whether it's Rodrigo, whether it's Renier, like they've gone after the next quote unquote big Brazilian attacker. And usually it is attacker, like no offense to Dani Alves or any of the others, but, and also so much of Barca's history. I mean, I have it behind me here that like their best moments have always come with the Brazilian in the squad. And that's the case for a lot of teams, right? Like Brazilians are you know, they produce fantastic. That's a footballing country. Football is religion there. But the next name on everybody's lips is this Endrick of Palmeiras, a 15-year-old who it seems too young to speak about. But when you're talking about these Brazilian teenagers that are going for huge fees, you know, clubs have to take risks when these kids sign their first professional contracts, basically at 16 with their clubs. And then by the time they're 18, it's time to come to Europe, then pretty much set in stone, you know who they are. And so he already is signing a deal. He's 16 in July. So he's already setting a deal with Palmeiras till June of 2025 with a 16 million euro release clause. And, you know, it just brings up this idea where Barcelona have unwisely spent their money. But the Brazilian market is an interesting one because Brazilians and English players are both English players are overvalued by their own system and the Premier League money. But Brazilians are always, especially at that age, those teenagers, you have to take a shot. You have to take a risk. And it seems like this kid, you know, there's a reason why all clubs are in on this kid, because it seems like this is a can't-miss product. But again, doesn't turn 18 until July of 2024. So you wonder, you know, this timeline almost works out, where if Barcelona don't spend that 60 million release clause and are in early negotiations now to do that in 2024, well, I mean, maybe that 60 million will be worth it then when Barcelona's been in a financial spot. But, you know, it's just interesting to talk about because this is one of those for the future in the future, right? Like, obviously, it's not going to happen this summer, but it's for the future, in the future. But again, it's just, it's, it doesn't sit well with me because he's 15 years old, even though he's just doing insane things at 15.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a competition now, you know, who's first, who to get the Brazilian first, who, and of course, you start looking at younger ages. And I mean, this happens. There's been this competition with Real Madrid, as you said, with Florentino Perez trying to get the next Neymar after he lost his chance to sign him. But it is true that Barca has had a kind of a love story, we could say, because I think the best, or some of the best Brazilians have been through Barcelona, as you said, attacking players mostly. We've had lots of quality, and I think it's something that we're still going to see in the future, because also Brazilian players know that some of the best players of their country have gone to Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So they are obviously extremely attracted, and they want to recreate those paths that Ronaldinho took, that Neymar took, that Rivaldo took, etc. You know, so all those phenomenal players see themselves or reflect themselves upon the younger ones, you know, who want to be like them. And it's also true that now we have Deco, who's also in charge of the Brazilian market for Barcelona. He's currently not only representing players such as Rafinha himself, but he's also working for Barcelona, which some consider a bit of a conflict of interest. But I mean, Laporta trusts that Deco will do a good job for them because he knows the Brazilian market really well. So I mean, with him keeping an eye out, we can hopefully get some future talent. And Endrick has been one of the names that certainly everyone has been talking about now for a while. It's funny because there was an interview with him saying that he loved Real Madrid, and then a week after, an interview with him saying he loved Barcelona. So in the end, he's kind of like selling himself already. Unfortunately, he's only 15 years old and he's already doing this, but I mean, you know, you want the attention, you want to attract the big clubs. And I mean, I haven't seen matches of Endrick, but I've seen the typical YouTube highlights. I mean, he definitely looks very, very talented. It has to be said that with that age, to perform that level is very impressive. But let's see how it goes, because football is very tough psychologically. Mm-hmm. You might have all the quality in the world, but after a few years, you can maybe start to feel the pressure and fade away into nothing. So, I mean, hopefully he'll keep up this level, and hopefully Barca will be really aware of what's going on with him and will be there before Real Madrid, because they will definitely try and get him if he's as good as they say. And there will be other clubs in Europe who also try to get their part with Endrick.
Yeah, I mean, he signed that contract, but again, he has yet to even debut for the first team. He's just training with the Palmeiras first team. So we are even mm-hmm. 2 years, we are maybe a few months away from him even debuting with his Brazilian club's first team. And, you know, as Palmeiras has showed us before with recently with Matheus Fernandes, that whether Brazilian does well over there, I mean, as you said, it's language, it's culture. There's a lot of different things that can ruin a player's career at an early age, even injuries, Ansu. But, you know, Barcelona, it's interesting too, because we say he's 15 and he's super, super young, but Gabi was 16 and Pedri was 17 and Ansu was 16, right? So it's like age is more and more so in football, the way that footballers are being professionalized a little earlier, especially but more so in Europe, that you're seeing that kids are 16, 17 mentally between the years, like they might already have it, like it might already be there. But, you know, Brazil, who knows, like mentally where those kids are at 15, 16, 17 years old when they told them.
Also, like the formation that they have at Barcelona, the academy, it's like they really work on the player in all the aspects. And I really doubt that they have this same formation we have here in La Masia that they do back there in Brazil. You know, I think it's a different way of life. It's a different way of growing up. Of course, they're probably improving and developing there, but that's really professional how we do things here. And what you were saying about the age being maybe not as relevant now, it also applies to the older players, because now we're seeing that guys like Ronaldo, Lewandowski, etc. Sure. still are performing to older ages. So I think age is not as much as a factor as it used to be in football, where you would say, oh, he's 30 years old, he's getting old. Now some players have their best moments of their career when they're in their early 30s, you know. So now it's something we have to keep in mind, because the body is how one takes care of himself, how one really works in different aspects is really changing the way that footballers develop from young and until they get old.
Yeah, I've spoken about it before. I mean, going back to the Kubala diet, right, of the back in the day of the late 50s, players can't survive in any level. Like, if you have the Kubala diet, you're playing in the Conference League in the UK. That's where you're at now, because you go to the third division. Like, yes, he was insanely talented, but, you know, those diets just don't work anymore. You know, and I could say, you know, being post-30, I feel 30 some days, but also, you know, I speak to one of my best friends who goes to Clemson University, where, not goes to, but he's like one of their, we'll say, scientists, you know, sports scientists.
Yeah.
And just the technology that he'll tell me about or explain to me that's coming at the professional levels and the collegiate levels, well, the ones with, you know, a little bit of money here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. is just incredible. You know, back from when, even 10 years ago, when I, you know, in high school or youth levels, and they're like, hey, put a Band-Aid on it or do this or whatever, a little bit of ice, you know, and rest and yada, yada, yada. But now the what they have for, especially recovery, like what they have for recovery. You're right. Lewandowski is 20. He's what, 25, 26 years old in 1975. Like, that's basically what it is. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's touched meat or alcohol in, well, we know that, yes, obviously Bayern Munich during their parade celebrations, we've seen it, but I don't know. We're off the rails, Ramon. So that means I think it's time to wrap this. Yeah. So I think it's time to wrap this show up. Again, I want to remind people, the next great Brazilian, that was a YouTube clip I put on the site. But I think people after this conversation, Ramon, are not only interested to hear from you on the show again, of course, but on where they can find your work currently.
Yeah, well, I'm always collaborating with La Liga Lowdown, of course. So if they follow us there on Twitter, they'll have all our content. And if they want to follow me personally, my handle is Aeroslave, A-E-R-O-S-L-A-V, and double E at the end. And there, obviously, I usually talk about football and usually write in English, sometimes in Spanish. But those are our two main handles, we could say.
Well, that's in the show notes below. So just check that out and you can find him there. I want to say that for those who watched the video here, I was wearing our new Ola Kule shirt inspired by Frances, as well as a new sweatshirt with the logo. So remember, we do have merch finally after 5 years. We finally did it. So that is the Barcelona podcast and Teespring. There's also a link down in the show notes below. And then we're on Twitter and Instagram as well at the Barcelona Pod, at LT13 for me. Facebook group, that's the Barcelona Podcast. Patreon, that's the Barcelona Podcast. That's how we keep making these shows. And then YouTube, that's where you can find that video about the Brazilians, as well as the final match review. Actually, not sure if I'm going to do it. We'll see. But certainly, what I want to continue as we end the show to point people to is to the Women's Champions League final tomorrow. So that being today is Friday, tomorrow is Saturday. Watch the Champions League final, and I certainly will hope to talk about it at some point next week on the show, which is still a little bit in flux. We'll see what happens with that. So thanks so much, though, for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.